Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the international service of the Argentine radio transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI Miami Radio International and also via internet on rae.com.ar. This is Fernando Farias speaking and I'm bringing you this show in English for Wednesday, October 15, 2022. On today's program, we're going to have a feature on Daniel Barenboim, the acclaimed Argentine-born Israeli conductor, and who, in addition to being a marvelous and very respected music conductor and pianist, is a champion of world peace, especially in the Middle East. We'll also be sharing a feature on rock ballads, special rock ballads from Argentina, and also we'll be bringing back from the archives an interview that we recorded a year ago with the host of a very popular podcast in the US, Soccer is Football, which is about the differences between experiencing football in Argentina versus the US. If you want to get in touch with us, send an email to qslrai@gmail.com or a letter to Maipú Street 555, and then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. Either way, it's okay for sending reception reports if you are DXer. This show airs on the frequency of 5850 kHz, and you can also listen to us via internet on rai.com.ar plus our app for mobile devices that you can download for free. Let's start now with this feature on Daniel Barenboim.
RAE, Argentina to the World, presents 10 Argentinians who impressed the world. Daniel Barenboim, a musician beyond borders. One day in 1950, a 7-year-old Argentine boy made his debut as pianist. The world is full of prodigy children whose uniqueness melts into a heap of equals. But Daniel Barenboim, born in November 1942, was made of a special dove. His parents were remarkable pianists and they soon moved the newly born to the State of Israel. Barenboim's talent was immediately discovered by other musicians, so much so that after his debut in 1952 as a pianist in Salzburg, Austria, he was invited to continue studying there. He was only 10 years old and took lessons of orchestra conduction from a well-known conductor of the time, Igor Markevich. In 1952, he impressed other conductors and also gave his first concert in Paris. It was in Salzburg, where he played for the Wilhelm Furtwängler, who invited him first to the rehearsals of the Don Giovanni opera by Mozart, and later to perform with the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra. There it was that the incredible orchestra conductor said, "This year-old child, Barenboim, is a freak." Thank you. He made his first registration in 1954, and a year later he had lessons with his best teacher, Nadia Boulanger, the same who would teach Astor Piazzolla later. Number one pianist interpreting Chopin was Arthur Rubinstein. It was he who helped Barenboim, who was only 14, to perform in London and New York. In New York, Barenboim played at the Carnegie with the Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Leopoldo Stokowski and by Dimitri Mitropoulos, who would be the favorite conductor of Callas at the Metropolitan Opera House. In England, he met his first wife, the cello player Jacqueline Dupré, whom he married in 1967. The same year, the Six-Day War took place in which Israel would conquer a large part of the Palestinian territories. The war would leave a mark in Barenboim's life. He was 32 when he was appointed musical director of the Paris Orchestra, where he would stay until 1989, when a scandal related to his fees and politics pushed him away from the post. At that time, France celebrated the bicentenary of its revolution and opened the modern Bastille Opera. But the contract celebrated did not please the new government, who objected to Barenboim's double role of artistic and musical director. Therefore, he resigned. Then, figures such as Patrice Chéreux, composer and director Pierre Boulez, and soprano Jessie Norman sent a letter to President Mitterrand in which they threatened with canceling their own contracts if Barenboim was not reinstated in his post. No musician paralleled Barenboim's success in the second half of the 20th century. At that time, he was the Paris Orchestra conductor, traveled all around the world giving piano concerts, and many times acted as a soloist and director. He also conducted the Deutsche Berlin Opera, but he never quit playing chamber music with the most remarkable string soloists. His recordings with Jacqueline Dupré are widely remembered. Despite his personal relation with the cellist who suffered from multiple sclerosis, the last year of her life. By the beginning of the 80s, the Argentine Israeli broke the taboo that someone of their origin conducted the Wagnerian Festival of Beirut. Precisely when Richard Wagner was considered the reincarnation of anti-Judaism. Years later, in 2001, he dared interpret Wagner in Israel for the first time. The scandal reached Parliament, whose cultural commission declared the musician persona non grata, till he excused publicly for having performed a piece of Adolf Hitler's favorite composer. Hardly heard is the fact that Barenboim regularly questioned the occupation of the Palestinian territories and the policy of settlement of Jewish colonies. In June 2017, during the war 50th anniversary, the maestro stated, "To commemorate the 50 years of the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian lands is morally unacceptable. Even those who think that the war of the 6 days was necessary, they can't deny the occupation and everything that came afterwards are an absolute catastrophe. For the Palestinian and for the Israelis, both tragically and morally." His friendship with remarkable Palestinians, such as philosopher Edward Said, took him to found in 1999 a workshop integrated by Israeli, Palestinians, and Arab musicians, the Western Eastern Divan. And to do so, they chose a symbolic place, Weimar, Germany, a place where humanist ideals of the Illustration were darkened by the Holocaust. The orchestra performed in many places of the world, though its place of settlement lies in Sevilla, and which was born officially after the Wagner scandal. In 2005, the Western Eastern Divan performed in Ramallah, turning it into the first event of the orchestra in occupied territories. For many Palestinians, this is the first time they met with Israelis outside a military environment. Agel said to Daniel Barenboim, "You are the first thing I see of Israel which is not a soldier or a tank." In October 1989, Barenboim was in Buenos Aires, a month before the fall of the Berlin Wall, to conduct the Philharmonic Orchestra at a memorable public concert. Barenboim wanted to celebrate the 40th anniversary of his musical debut at the Cologne Theatre, interpreting a piece he had been postponing all his life, Bach's Goldberg Variations. That performance became a record that was heard all around the world. 7 years later, he gratified himself again. He conducted tango. He recorded My Beloved Buenos Aires, together with double bass player Héctor Console and Rodolfo Mederos Bandoneon. On the cover, he said, "Through this record full of nostalgia, I invite all the marvelous rhythms, the sensual melodies, and the eternal magic of my beloved Buenos Aires." Barenboim's activity, with more than 74 years of age and 67 of musical career, is continuous. He received the most remarkable awards for his artistic and humanist activity throughout the world. He was the musical director of the Teatro alla Scala in Milano during almost 4 years. He continues as director of the Orchestra of the Peace between Arabs and Israelis. He continues with the direction of the Staatskapelle Berlin Orchestra. He also leads the Pierre Boulez Concert Hall, especially built in Berlin by the mythical architect Frank Gehry in 2015. He supports his musical internship project at the Colón Theatre in Buenos Aires, and among other activities, he continues giving concerts with his life friend, Martha Argerich. RAE, Argentina to the World, presented 10 Argentinians who impressed the world. Daniel Barenboim, a musician beyond borders. Production, Darío Burstein. Coordination, Silvana Avellaneda. Edition, Matías Arreza Igor. The voice, Miriam Turcula.
You're listening to RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the international service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI and also via internet on rae.com.ar. You can also listen to our podcasts there, rae.com.ar. Now, we'll have a conversation with two fellow Argentines who are in the US and have a podcast on YouTube and also on TikTok called Soccer is Football. And I'm exaggerating my Spanish pronunciation. Soccer is football, not football. Football. They are Eric and Seba, and they are down the line. Hello, Eric. Hello, Seba. How's it going? Thank you for this contact with Rai.
Hello, hello.
And can you hear us okay?
Yeah, perfect. Great sound.
Hey, Fer, ¿cómo estás? How are you, brother?
Very, very well. I'm very happy and excited to have this conversation. I've been looking forward to talk to you guys for some time.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for the opportunity and to do this. We're excited. I think we've never done an interview
on the radio.
On the radio and with a fellow Argentinian from Argentina
and in English.
Yeah. And in English. Yeah, yeah, lots of firsts. But this is super interesting because RAE, I don't know if you guys are aware, is a radio station from Argentina that targets foreigners. Yeah? We don't usually talk to Argentines. And we try to present Argentina to foreigners around the world, many times assuming that they know little about Argentina. And what you guys do in the U.S. to have a podcast in the U.S. about football, it's super interesting and it's going to be very helpful to present the way we feel and we experience football, but from a different perspective and in English.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, to give or to present football or to the U.S. people here where we are. They call it soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And what the message that we're trying to get across is that it doesn't matter how you call it in the end. You know, soccer, yeah. Football, futsal,
I agree.
Kickball,
calcio,
however you want to call it, calcio. We just want to share the love of the sport and. What a better way to do it than from two world champions.
Yeah, excellent. We are all world champions. That's something that I also work as a tour guide here in Buenos Aires. And the feeling of being world champion is something that is difficult to convey to a foreigner, to transmit what to win a World Cup means to Argentines.
And you get to talk about being a world champion until the end of time.
Yeah.
It's not just until the next World Cup. It is until the end of time.
Yes, 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 absolutely. Especially if you won it three times. Well, but guys, why don't you start introducing yourselves a little bit? Where are you guys from in Argentina? Where you are in the U.S.? How you ended up in the U.S.? A little bit of a personal introduction.
Okay, well, Eric, I'll start first. My name is Eric Bernhardt. I was born in Buenos Aires, Capital Federal, and when I was 8 years old, my family decided to move away from Argentina and from all our family. So all my cousins, aunts, grandparents, they all stayed behind. Me and my parents and my sister, we moved actually to Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there for about almost 20, 25 years. And then I moved to Florida, where we are still here and alone. I left my parents still in Puerto Rico. Now fast forward even more, my parents retired and moved here to Florida with us and got married, kids, and the whole nine, and have my business here. And here in Florida is where I met Seba about 15 years ago almost already.
15.
And that's... Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
my name is Sebastián Saldívar. I was born in Bahía Blanca, Argentina, provincia de Argentina. And I immigrated here when I was a kid as well. I was 8 years old, and we moved to Seattle, mm-hmm. Washington. And my dad moved here with nothing, and we stayed back for a few months to sell everything in Argentina, and then we emigrated after my dad moved over to Washington State. Started from scratch, had nothing, and then... again, like Eric is saying, fast forward a few years and I ended up moving to Florida because I got tired of the Seattle weather. At one side of the year, horrible weather. It's very akin to England latitude. It's very gray and dreary. We get 2 weeks of summer and I got really annoyed with that. And so I ended up moving to Florida and that's where I met Eric. And we met at church.
Yeah.
I'm a musician and he was also doing some music and we met up over there and we started
in
we
the
met
church, you said.
Yes, in church.
Okay.
And then later on through the years we kept in good touch and now we have a podcast.
Now, I've got a question for both of you guys because you moved to the US when you were very little, but you retain your Argentinity with teeth, with passion, and you show that in your podcast. You wear Argentine jerseys and you eat bizcochitos and you speak. You haven't lost your accent a bit, but you're an adult man. But you live practically all of your life in the U.S. So how can you explain that?
Well, I can go ahead and tell you right now that when we moved to United States, my mom told me. She said, and I'll say it in Spanish, en esta casa Se habla criollo. In this house, we speak Spanish.
Yeah, we speak Argentine Spanish.
Yes. So we were forced to speak Spanish in the house. We could not use any English words in the house. We had to maintain our Argentinianness. And anytime we had a jar, and anytime that my sister and I would speak in English, we had to put a dollar in the jar.
Mm-hmm.
Come out of our allowance. So we couldn't use Spanish at all. And then my dad, being a language translator by trade, he when I grew up, in when most kids would go out during the summers during high school, they would go cut grass, mow the lawn forever to make some money. My dad would force me to sit down with him and learn the trade of translating documents from English to Spanish and Spanish mm-hmm. to English. So I was able to maintain two languages fluently throughout my entire life here in the States.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I see. Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, we're talking to Eric and Seba. They are the hosts of Soccer is Football, a podcast on YouTube and TikTok that we definitely recommend you to check out. And let's talk a little bit about football or soccer. How is it? Is it growing in the U.S.? We call it the king of sports, no? It is the most popular sport practically all over the world, except in the U.S. But I've been told that maybe with Messi there, that may be changing. What do you see? Do you see football becoming in the U.S. what it is in other countries?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of it is that we got to experience when we both immigrated to the U.S., I mean, in my case, to Puerto Rico, soccer was inexistent. I mean, it was a weird sight to see a ball that you kick, you know,
yeah.
at least in Puerto Rico. I used to play soccer in the baseball field because there weren't soccer fields.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved to the U.S., now a little bit more, there's a sport existed, but it was never anything that was mainstream or anything. And even now today, I think the U.S., and this is personal, you know, opinion, the U.S. is still the only place in the world where the sport still has a lot to grow,
mm-hmm.
like a lot, in every sense, professionally and the way it's played, to also, you know, at a kid's level, university level, even professional. And also a lot to grow for the fan. The fan base is still getting used to it and the people watching it. And here, American football, basketball, and baseball are still kings.
Yeah.
But soccer or football, it's creeping up. It's making its way. It already surpassed hockey, which was the number four sport, and took that number four spot. And it's very close to taking that number three spot.
Really?
Oh yeah,
amazing.
That's a prediction that you had in the beginning when we started this podcast. The first episode we recorded, he said his prediction was that baseball would be overtaken by soccer.
Mm-hmm.
I will also say that Americans have had a hard time learning low scoring sports.
Yeah. I was going to mention that. I was told by many Americans. Yeah, it's fascinating, but I it's so low scoring. You can even end up watching a game that ends with no goals at all, and for an American mentality, that is a lot to take.
Yeah, they even so that they just decided that every goal on American football was going to be worth 6 points instead of one.
Yeah,
and basketball is 2 points,
mm-hmm.
two and three,
Yeah, and I also think that, for example, United States, they're kind of reinventing soccer in this country because. Mm. This is the only country that has leagues in the world, soccer leagues in the world, football leagues, that has a system that does not have relegation. So nobody gets to go to second division in the States.
Argentina is headed that way, I'm afraid. But that's a different
and
issue.
It's a mess.
It's a mess. But let's not go there.
Yeah, no. That's going to be a 2-hour episode.
So what? You were saying?
Well, I'm saying that I feel like U.S. soccer fans are used to having the MLS, their MLS league, and then at the end of the season, everybody gets a participation medal. Great job. We start from scratch again. There's no segunda división, second division, or B or whatever. Unfortunately, you know,
and you're that's saying that, that football, soccer is not competitive as other sports in the U.S.
They want to make it competitive. They're trying to make it. I can see that they're trying to make it competitive, and it's exciting. But there's nothing more passionate about a team that is in the bottom of the table fighting for its life to stay in that division.
It is giving me the goosebumps as you mentioned that, and it's something that was brought up by the Colombians after the final of the Copa America. They were pointing out that in the final, even though they were the best team in the tournament, they lacked that drive that Argentines have. And many sports journalists in Colombian media were making the analysis that football here in this country is crazily competitive. I mean, you go to any kind of game, even friends after work gathering for a friendly match, and it's the World Cup final. Nobody wants to lose. Nobody celebrates a second place. It's death or football.
Right. It's weird. And I feel like United States, like they hosted in 94, they hosted a World Cup, and, you know, they tried to bring the masses in and everything. And they're trying it again by signing new stars like Messi. That's the reason why we started this podcast, is because we went to watch Diego Martinez, the Argentinian goalkeeper, playing a exhibition match in Orlando, here in Orlando. And on the way back home, we talked about how the arrival of Messi is going to change everything. And we started saying maybe we should jump on that wave that United States is experiencing signing new people, signing new talents that, you know, otherwise we wouldn't see. And this league is doing that finally. I think it's finally waking up to the signing of major, major stars.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, because for years the MLS has been regarded as the retirement league.
Yeah. Yes.
Hopefully it's changing its image a little bit, because it would be nice for the MLS to not be the retirement league.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. But the question is, what about the female side of this? Because the American female national team are dominant and king, and they're the best in the world. And actually, if you watch I remember those Megan Rapinoe moves in the previous World Cups, and it was actually better football than the men's. More entertaining. But, I mean, you have that in the U.S. and quite the opposite in the men's side.
Yeah, I just think women's soccer, for example, in terms of, like, even in the early 90s, like Brandi Chastain that scored the winning goal, even earlier than that, Michelle Akers-Stahl, these women players that I remember watching when I was a kid here in the States, they've always fostered a stronger female soccer culture than male soccer culture. It's for me, watching the U.S. women play is a joy. It's like watching Barcelona.
Absolutely. Great comparison. Very, very good football. The American national team in the previous competitions was amazing. Amazing. Unbelievable.
And the men's, unfortunately, is not.
And to be fair, there's not a lot of women-specific soccer stadiums in the world. There's not a lot. And the U.S. has one. Like, they actually just made a women-specific soccer stadium. I think...
I didn't know there were different kind of stadiums. I mean, the field, the pitch is smaller.
So... No. It's the same pitch, but the stadium is made only for the women's soccer team. Like, for example, in Orlando, we have the Orlando City soccer club. It's they made a stadium just for that team.
The men
and the women's team, they both play in the same stadium.
Yeah.
But in Kansas, it was in Kansas City?
In Kansas,
they made a secondary stadium just for the women's team, which is incredible to me. The sport, the way it's taken off, it should have happened a long time ago, but I mean, it is still, I think, like, soccer for men here in the U.S. has a lot of room to grow. I think it's the opposite for women's soccer and the rest of the world, meaning the rest of the world
has to imitate the U.S.
In that regard. But is that because soccer, at least until a time ago, was seen as a girl's sport? I mean, girls would play soccer while boys would play basketball or American football. But is that the reason? Like hockey, like field hockey here in Argentina for many years was a girls' game, and thus we have a very strong female field national hockey team. Am I right to make that connection?
It doesn't sound wrong. I don't know enough to.
Well, for example, I grew up going to high school here in this country, and the emphasis that they have placed on youth women's soccer, youth girls soccer, the career path from high school to club soccer to Olympic development to national team, I mean college to national team, is very straightforward for women's soccer, a lot more than for men's.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see where that would happen. Number one, number two, United States, like we said in the beginning, they're dominated by football. It's American football.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, it's baseball and basketball. So
I mean, you could say here in the U.S. because American football is seen as a men's sport.
Yeah.
They said, okay, well, let's give soccer to the women, you know. And
I will tell you, when I was in junior high, high school, I would bring my soccer ball to school. And these kids that played American football and baseball, they would call me a girly guy. They were like, oh yeah, look at this guy coming over.
Exactly. You know,
play soccer.
Here in Argentina, we are very familiar with American pop culture, no, and films and series and music. And I remember watching that film, Coming to America, Eddie Murphy.
Yes, Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy is from Africa, and he's made fun of by some of the characters because he plays football, and he's mocked for playing that sport that you play with your feet. And I said, what are you talking about? It's the king of sports. How you made fun for playing football? It's actually the contrary here in Argentina. Everybody wants to play football in school. You have to force kids at school to play other sport. So they learn volleyball or handball or any other sport, because otherwise, if it was up to them, they will only play football. Soccer.
Yeah, I got made fun of in school for that. And I would, during lunchtime, what I did is I started a little league with all the immigrant kids, all of us immigrants. Because I mean, if you look at our podcast, I'm very white. I look very American, but I'm Argentinian.
Mm-hmm.
I would be the only white guy hanging out with all these kids from other countries like Mexico and Nicaragua. And I would be playing. I would do a league, and then once in a while, these American kids that wanted to, you know, prove me wrong would come over, try to play. They would get destroyed because they did not know how to play. We would teach these kids lessons about what football was.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that football or soccer has something that other sports don't have. And this was described by Alejandro Dolina, a radio host and writer. I'm pretty sure you're familiar with him. Mm-hmm. He said that soccer, it doesn't matter if it ends without any goals, without any scoring. But football, soccer, a soccer game has everything. Has luck, has bravery, has cowardice, has talent, has everything. It's the sport that is more similar to life. That's why, that's what makes it so fascinating.
Yes.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. They tend to compare, and it's nothing wrong with it, but they tend to compare the NFL, the National Football League, the Super Bowl. We have a Super Bowl competition every year, which by now is already world famous. They tend to compare the Super Bowl with the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. No.
And I say there's no
No.
This
no,
happens
no.
every year, and every year you can start over again.
Yeah.
When we watched the World Cup final together, Eric and I, in December of 2022, and we cried like babies.
Yeah, besides, there's a big difference. Many people watch the Super Bowl, not for the game itself, but for the commercials, the trailers,
and
the halftime show. And nobody cares about that. When they put a Shakira halftime show in the Copa America final, everybody was like, come on, let this be done. We want to continue watching the game.
Get over
with that. We want to see who wins.
To prove your point, in my household, the game, the Super Bowl goes on, and it gets muted when the game starts, and we raise the volume when the commercials go on.
So we only
watch it for the commercials.
Exactly.
And in the final, Copa America final, me and Seba, we went to the game, And when halftime came, we just stood up from our seats and went out to grab food and drinks because we didn't care.
Nobody cares
one second about the
and you know what's fascinating about that is even though the final that we went to was in Miami and they were trying to keep it, you know, whatever, you could tell that there was a little bit of American sort of ingenuity. They put a halftime show in a football game. Eso no pasa. That doesn't happen.
No. Besides,
it never happened in our national competition.
Right. The break between the two halves took longer because
it was too long.
It was too long for that show, and that's a no-no in football too. Guys, this is
that was an Americanism.
An Americanism, guys. This is amazing. Yeah. I'm enjoying this very much. We're talking to Eric and Seba, the hosts of Soccer is Football. I'm gonna ask you to have a repetition, have another interview in the future. So, but we're coming to the end of the show, and so I wanna make two final questions. What do you guys expect from the World Cup in the U.S. in 2 years?
Well, we expect it to be probably the largest or the most watched World Cup ever. Mm-hmm. Because now, you know, we can count on the rest of the world to see the sport. But I think it being here in the United States, it'll get a lot of attention. It doesn't need more, but it's going to have a lot of attention. So we're expecting a big, big event. Like it's going to be a larger, more teams than ever. Mm-hmm. And we expect it to be a great, like, show, if you want to call mm-hmm. it. But also, we expect Argentina to perform well, mm-hmm. With or without Messi. If he makes it or not, we're not concerned about that. I think Argentina is going to do well, mm-hmm. And we're expecting everything.
Excellent.
And I think social media is also going to continually expand viewership. I mean, if you're talking about United States, Canada, and Mexico, three major countries in North America, that's going to be a huge, huge, like yeah. you're saying, Eric, I agree with you. I think it'll be the biggest, the most watched event in the history of World Cups.
Yeah, probably you're right. Okay, and the final question is, if you could explain to our listeners in English what soccer, football means to us, in your view. Why is so important? What is football to an Argentine?
Oof. That question takes another episode.
It's similar to what is breathing, what is eating, what is
enough
love.
Said.
You know,
enough said.
It's up there for us. It's not just a sport. It's one of the reasons, right? Not the reason, but one of the reasons we get up every day. And yeah. it is that important to us. You know, the sport is not. It stopped being a sport a long time ago. It's a way of life. And at least for me, Eric, for me, it takes place in the top five things in my
life. Yeah, top five, de una, top five for sure.
I right there with family, God, you know,
country,
yeah, pets, friends,
exactly,
and football. Yep.
Yeah,
that's right.
Enough said, folks. This has been amazing. Congratulations on your podcast. We'll have another chat in the future if you agree. Because this has been very enjoyable for me and very
Absolutely.
Useful.
Absolutely, we would love it.
Thank you very much, folks, and keep the good work with the podcast. It's amazing.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having us, Fer.
Oh, appreciate it, brother. It was my pleasure. Absolutely. Well, that was Eric and Seba, the host of Soccer is Football, that you should check out on YouTube and also on TikTok on RAE Argentina to the World. Friends, once again, we bring you the series of RAE in English Rock Special Edition. Today, we're going to be bringing you a selection of some of Argentina's rock best ballads, beginning with a tune included in the best-selling album of Argentine rock of all times. It's an album from 1993 that sold hundreds of thousands of albums, I know. If you are in the United States and you're familiar with the numbers of Michael Jackson's Thriller, 40 million albums worldwide, that's practically the population of Argentina entirely, you may be shrugging off this figure. But in Argentina, that's a pretty impressive number. And that album is by Fito Páez from 1993, El Amor Después del Amor. It's a collection of greatest hits. and all of those albums became huge classics. And one of those songs is Un Vestido y Un Amor, a beautiful slow song, a ballad, that means a dress and a love. And there it goes.
Te vi, juntabas margaritas del mantel. Ya sé que te traté bastante mal. No sé si eras un ángel o un rubí, o simplemente te vi. Te vi, saliste entre la gente a saludar. Los astros se rieron otra vez. La llave de mandala se quebró. O simplemente te vi. Todo lo que diga está de más. Las luces siempre encienden en el alma. Y cuando me pierdo en la ciudad, vos ya sabes comprender. Es solo un rato, no más. Tendría que llorar o salir a matar. Te vi, te vi, te vi. Yo no buscaba a nadie, te vi.
Fito Páez, with a tune included in his 1993 album El Amor Después del Amor, which means Love After Love. Another best-selling album of Argentine rock is Alta Suciedad, which is the first solo album by Andrés Calamaro after he disbanded his Spanish-Argentine group Los Rodríguez. That album also contained a large number of radio hits, and one of those songs is a beautiful ballad entitled Crímenes Perfectos, which means something like Perfect Crimes. There it goes. Ryan English brings you the best ballads of Argentine rock. Now Andrés Calamaro from his album of 1997, Alta Suciedad, with Crímenes Perfectos.
¿Sentiste alguna vez lo que es tener el corazón roto? Sentiste a los asuntos pendientes volver, hasta volverte muy loco. Si resulta que sí, sí podrás entender lo que me pasa a mí esta noche. Ella no va a volver y la pena me empieza a crecer. Adentro la moneda cayó por el lado de la soledad y el dolor. Todo lo que termina, termina mal. Poco a poco. Termina, se contamina más. Y eso se cubre de polvo. Me parece que soy de la quinta que vio el Mundial 78. Me tocó crecer viendo a mi alrededor para no. Moneda cayó por el lado de la soledad otra vez. No me lastimes con tus crímenes perfectos. Mientras la gente indiferente se da cuenta de vez en cuando solamente sale afuera la peor madera.
And that's Andrés Calamaro with a song entitled Crímenes Perfectos, Perfect Crimes, that is part of our special edition today with the best, or some of the best, Argentine rock ballads. And, well, you may be wondering if you are familiar with Argentine rock names. Where is Charly García? And, of course, our biggest rock star has a number of pretty beautiful love songs. But if you ask me, his best wasn't from his solo career, but from the group he integrated with Oscar Moro, Pedro Aznar and David Lebón, entitled Serú Girán. Some people call this group the Argentine Beatles because, well, all of them, or practically all of them, sang. They were four, and, well, they had a style and a look that, well, you could draw that comparison. Anyway, the music is what matters, and one of the classics by Serú Girán was written by Charly García, but is sung by David Lebón, the band's guitarist, and is entitled Seminare.
Quiero ver, quiero entrar, nena, nadie te va a hacer mal, excepto amarte. Vas aquí, vas allá, pero nunca te encontrarás al escaparte. No hay fuerza alrededor, no hay pociones para el amor. ¿Dónde estás? ¿Dónde voy? Porque estamos en la calle de la sensación. Del sol que quema de amor, te doy pan, quieres sal, nena, nunca te voy a dar lo que me pides. Te doy Dios, quieres más, es que nunca comprenderás a un pobre pibe. Esas motos que van a mil, solo el viento te harán sentir. Nada más, nada más. Si pudieras olvidar tu mente frente a mí, sé que tú
Serú Girán with a great track entitled Seminare. And now to complete and to sign off this special edition of Rye in English with a selection of Argentine rock love songs or ballads, we're going to bring you perhaps the most famous of them, which is a song from 1969, Almendra's album, Almendra. But we are not going to bring you the original edition. We are going to bring you something that was recorded at the Vélez Sarsfield Stadium in December 2009, when Almendra's founder and leader, Luis Alberto Spinetta, celebrated 40 years with music, bringing on the stage all of the members of bands that he integrated, and they were more than just a few. But the climax of the group, the climax of the night, I mean, was when around 4 in the morning, he brought for the first time in decades the original lineup of Almendra, and they perform the most famous tune, which is a ballad entitled Muchacha Ojos de Papel, Paper Eyed Girl. And with this, we sign off. This is special. We hope you liked it.
Hasta el alba, muchacha, pequeños pies, no corras más, quédate hasta el alba.
por la ventana suba el sol. Muchacha, piel de rayón, no corras más, tu tiempo es hoy. Y no hables más, muchacha, corazón de tiza, cuando todo duerma te robaré un color. Y no hables más, muchacha, corazón de tiza, cuando todo duerma te robaré un color. Muchacha, voz de gorrión, ¿dónde vas? Quédate hasta el día. Muchacha, pechos de miel, no corras más, quédate hasta el día. Duerme un poco, yo entre tanto construiré un castillo con tu vientre hasta que el sol. Muchacha, te haga reír hasta llorar, y no hables más, muchacha, corazón de tiza, cuando todo duerma te robaré un color. Y no hables más, muchacha, corazón de tiza, cuando todo duerma te robaré un
live version of Muchacha Ojos de Papel, Paper Eyed Girl by Almendra. We come to the end of today's edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior in English. My name is Fernando Farias. This show airs via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on RAE.com.ar, plus our app for mobile devices, Digital RAE, that you can download for free. Thank you very much for listening, folks, and hasta mañana.